Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy. Excited, as always, when my homies are on the podcast. We got Chad Peterman from Peterman Brothers and Aaron Gaynor from Eco Plumbers, heating and air conditioning technicians. About a quarter of $1 billion worth of revenue from Indiana and Ohio. But I love it because they talk about current problems that you guys are having and solutions for it, or potentially future problems that you guys are having and some solutions for it that they've found and worked through. So like real life scenarios. So I love these type of episodes. And another thing, an important thing, turn the volume up. You might start noticing some changes with the To The Point Home Services podcast come May 1st. Why, you ask? Well, I'll tell you. Because your boy just got full control back from Rhino, since I exited Rhino. So I got full control back, which means I get to do my own thing. And that means more. We need to start shaking it up and doing more with this podcast. And now I've got free reign to do it. So pay attention come May 1st, or the first episode in May, because you just might notice a difference. So enjoy this episode with the homies, Chatty P and Aaron G.
This is To The Point, a Rhino experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
All right. Thank you both for being here. Start off, want to say congratulations to Chad and closing a great deal. Really proud of you. So, Wingman, what's your call sign?
Viper.
Viper and I, we went through all the surveys, and instead of just going one subject to one subject, we used a confidential technology with AI to figure out what everyone was most concerned about. And so we formulated some questions along that lines. A lot of people had similar questions and issues in their business. So with that, looking back to like 2020 through 2023, we had a lot of stimulus, easy money, companies grew, a lot of private equity entered our market or our industry. And then in the last couple of years, we've heard, leads have gotten softer, it's harder, margins been compressing. So we're gonna start around there. We're gonna start with kind of the market shift. HVAC manufacturers have reported that shipments have been down year over year about 30%. So the first question is, what do you guys think is causing this? Is it the macroeconomic pressure? Is it consumer sentiment changing? Or is it just that we pulled all those installs up from during COVID?
You're the HVAC guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, is this on? No? Sure.
There you go. Yo. That works. I think there's a lot of that stuff, right? I think there's macroeconomic stuff. I think there's pull forward through COVID, but I think at the end of the day, it all comes back to execution. People still need to replace their equipment. Their plumbing's still going to break. They're still going to have electrical issues. And, I think if there's one thing that I learned kind of coming out of, call it the back end of 23 into 24, is, we saw a ton of growth. Between 22 and 23, we doubled in size. And when you double in size in 365 days, what you find yourself doing is throwing a lot of people at problems. And so I think, as a lot of businesses did, okay, demand's pulling back, how do we continue to grow? For us, it came down to a lot of execution. Like, how are we good at these things? Are we, what is our booking rate? Are we sending the right tech to the right call? What's our onboarding? What's our training look like? All of that stuff. And so, I think that's something in the business. It can, a lot of growth and a lot of demand can mask all of the blocking and tackling that needs to take place in these businesses. They're not, it's a very simple business, but it's not easy, right? Because it's all the unsexy things that you have to focus on in order to be successful. And I think, you know, lucky for us, we're in a room here today with a ton of great operators who understand the importance of those things. And I think if you talk to them, it's not about some new whiz-bang marketing idea or this, that, or the other. It's about execution. It's about answering our phones. It's about sending the texts out, giving options to customers, all of those things, which I think are, you know, critical and the building blocks that, you know, aren't always the shiniest, but they're what make these businesses work.
Yeah, so I guess from an economic standpoint, I think the last couple of years, we just did a study from our plumbing department since 2000 and just took a look at, said, what's happened to our conversions, average sales in general. And we have seen a downtick in conversions over the last 5 years in general in that area. I think obviously inflational prices have changed that. I mean, from 5 years ago, what our pricing was till now, I do think consumers feel pressure. We saw, you know, some great growth last year in our business into our EBITDA, but we did see a margin shrinkage in some of the areas in our business. So I think you are feeling some of that pressure. In general, at least my belief is, I know some guys in here have some big numbers going. But from my standpoint, yeah, I think the market feels a little tight, but I still believe there's tons of opportunities. The call volumes still seem pretty strong. I think the conversions and getting people to say yes has got a little harder. I think there's been a shift in a little bit of purchasing on how you buy. Consumers have changed a little bit of how fast they'll pick up and get an HVAC system. I definitely have seen that. And we're newer in the HVAC game and in the big picture to some of you guys. I think we got in probably after everybody was making all the money in HVAC. So it's been a good lesson for us. But I do think that there's some economic things that are still tight. And like, I guess what you say is, I know there's enough money available to fund these projects, right? But we're seeing turn down rates a decent amount in our area. We're definitely, I think you've seen repo rates go up, right? Home foreclosures are going up. So I definitely think there's things playing into it. But to your point, I think there's still a lot of opportunity. But it is getting harder to get yeses, at least what we've seen in our business. It's getting harder to get yeses.
Thank you. To wrap this question up, in the last 12 to 24 months, is there anything, one specific thing you started doing or stopped doing that moved the needle for you?
That's a great question. I think one thing for me is I went back and I spent a lot of time with our team just really looking at our price book and saying, hey, I think, you know, obviously we've seen the price increases, and I think what's happened over time is we just started pricing a certain base of people out of the market for us. And I think that started to really hurt us in our marketplace, our brand, and the ability to create volume and work, right? So we went back and said, hey, we need to find better price points for things. We need to make sure that not every average plumbing sale ticket is $1,000. Like, it cost the entry point basically for us became $1,000. And I think we went back and said, how do we revamp this and make this feel that, you know, the everyday American can provide buy service from us? And I think we were starting to price people out of the market, and we were starting to see that a lot of the people that had done businesses for years weren't actually able to afford that from us anymore. The people making, you know, even $80,000 a year or $65,000 a year just couldn't afford to actually purchase a plumbing repair from us, which I thought was a big change for us. So we really looked at that.
So it wasn't raising your prices, it was
actually lowering prices in certain areas that we felt would add more value, finding better price points on toilets, finding better price points on disposals, et cetera, all the way down to renegotiating our equipment, making sure that we could find something that was a easy swap out for a furnace for the everyday person in general. And I think that was just for us recognizing that there was a whole base of business that we were underserving and a volume game that we were losing.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Pastor Chad?
Yeah, I think for us, I think Aaron made a great point. You know, getting yeses is harder. And so I think what we did is really looked at, okay, if getting yeses is harder, how are we going to position ourselves to get as many yeses as possible? And so for us, it really started, and this may sound like a weird place to kind of pinpoint, but for us, it was onboarding. It sounds silly, right? It's like, okay, yeah, hire new techs and bring them on and we'll have more people and all of that stuff. And for us, it was literally like looking at every 15 minutes of onboarding a new technician into our business, and how are we going to make this the most impactful experience of their life so that when they do go out in the field, one, they can start generating revenue sooner. And also they're ready to go and they're providing an experience where people can associate that value with it. And so for us, onboarding is like the most sacred of sacred things, especially when you're getting technicians that are job ready. We train them from the ground up, but you can only do that so many times over the course of the year. So technicians who have 5-7 years of experience, how do we take and take what they may have already learned, really untrain that, and then train them in the Peterman way? And so we are like maniacal about how we do this, what are all the touch points, how we're educating people, bringing in professional educators into the business to say, hey, you know, it's not enough for just the service manager to stand up in front of the room and rattle off a bulleted list of, well, this is what you do, and this is how you do this. Like, we have to be able to connect with these people. How do we teach adult learners the skills that they need to be successful out there? And I've seen a lot of really positive stuff. We've still got a long way to go. But I think it's something in your businesses, taking a look at what does your onboarding look like? Is it, you know, we were back in the day, it's like flip the guy the key and hand them some calls and let her rip. Obviously not the best. I think looking at your onboarding experience and seeing what that looks like is only going to set your guys up and gals out there for success in the field and to get as many yeses as possible.
Thank you. My next question was on margin, but you guys both kind of covered that with your answers, and that, you know, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot better at onboarding. Aaron, you went back, negotiated a lot of pricing to protect your margin, because we've seen a lot of people racing to the bottom as the leads have gone softer. So we're going to skip that question, and we're going to go into growth. Now, you both have built sizable multi-location businesses, you know, originally through Greenfield, but I know you both have done some acquisitions more recently. So if you had to start over today, what model would you choose and why?
Greenfield.
One location.
Greenfield, one location. I agree. I think for me, I know Chad did probably some more acquisitions than we did. We did one acquisition for an HVAC company. It was about $8 million. It didn't go that well. I think Mike and I both would say that if we could redo that, we would just get our money back. But as part of the growing pains, as part of learning, we definitely learned a lot about what that looks like for us from an acquisition. I think our success has been through Greenfield, personally.
Attention to the point, listeners. Branding has never been more important. Is your brand in serious need of an upgrade? Do you have a new company and need a new brand but don't want to wait 6 months or pay a ridiculous amount to get it done? If your brand looks like everyone else's, well, guess what? You are everyone else. But Prolific, they build brands that dominate. From the first Google search to the driveway, Prolific Brand Design can help you be more of you, because you are the unique difference that sets you apart from all your competitors. So let's be real for a second. Your brand is either winning you customers or costing you money. Just ask some of our clients like Ken Goodrich, Ishmael Valdez, my boy Chad Peterman, and even myself. Prolific Brand Design is the creative pros behind some of the best home services logos, truck wraps, websites, and now email marketing campaigns. Wouldn't you love it if your email marketing open rates were 30, 40, 50% and don't go into the spam folder hell? That's how we roll at Prolific. So check them out at prolificbranddesign.com and ask for the To The Point promo, Prolific Brand Design. Be more of you. Be prolific.
I think we just understand how to do that better. I think our culture of our business is more around that. We understand how to just go into a market, start, you know, buying the radio ad, buying the positioning, doing the things like that, and then the culture is easier for us to integrate right from the beginning. So I personally am a fan of Greenfields. I think we've been able to do that really good in the Dayton market and making some headway in the Cincinnati market now in the last couple of years. So we went, you know, we had a Greenfield in Dayton in about 4 years doing $24 million, right? So I think it shows that it's still possible to go take market share by just going in and starting from the ground up, and purchasing leads is cheaper.
So you would find that it's easier to build culture than to keep it after an acquisition?
Yeah, at least from my experience. A lot of these guys have done that better than us. I wouldn't say that's a strong suit for us, but we like Greenfield, and I think secondary markets are strong too, not always having to go into major metro.
Yeah, for us, it's been a combination. We've done a little bit of everything. I'd say probably my favorite is, you know, one, and we've got 11 locations across kind of Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky. My favorite is doing tuck-in acquisition work. When I know that I have an established leader at a branch who can do more, we look at smaller acquisitions kind of in that $2 to $5 million revenue range that we can tuck into a current location, retrain those technicians while they're retraining. Our own technicians in that market can run those additional calls that we're generating. All of our stuff is centralized. So we answer every call, dispatch every call from Indianapolis for all 11 locations. We're all one brand and hope to be one brand moving forward. And then when we go into a new market, we do kind of a, I don't know, there's a bunch of weird names for them, but like a brownfield where I'm going to acquire, flip the brand, and then go off to the races. So we kind of do the, you know, yeah, we want to go in heavy on the branding, but usually do a small acquisition to get things started. So we have calls rolling day one, so that the technicians that we bring on, we can keep busy. And then we're going to use our brand over top of that. And with second Aaron's point in secondary markets, I think there's a lot of business. If there's one question I get asked a lot, it's like, should I start a new location? I'm like, well, how big are you in your current one? Well, you could probably be four times the size. I think a lot of these markets are a lot bigger than we think. And I would tell you to grow your one location as big as humanly possible before you do a second one, because distance is a thing. You know, we've got locations that are 3 hours away. Well, that is a different culture than, say, Indianapolis, where all of our, you know, back end is and all of that stuff. And so it becomes difficult to manage, and you've got a lot of personalities and all of those things. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm already down this road, so I can't turn back now. But yeah, if I had to do it all over again, I would just have one location in Indianapolis and, you know where everybody is at. Everybody comes to the same building. It would be awesome.
Yeah, it would just be like Parker and Sons or yeah. Morris Jenkins.
They seem to have figured it out. That seems easier.
All right, competing in a commoditized market. So it seems like, you know, in the last 5 years or so, everyone's got a Prolific or Kick Charge brand. You know, everyone's on the same CRM. It's kind of table stakes, the booties, the dispatch text message. So do you guys have one thing in particular that you're doing in your market that your competitors genuinely are just not doing that sets you apart?
It's a great question, because I think early on we felt like a lot of those things were competitive edges, right? And now they're just, everybody does them. I think one thing that we tried to introduce in our HVAC business is a $1,500 buyback program where we just say, hey, any repairs you do for the life of forever, we will buy back that repair as long as you buy a system from us. And there's no strings attached. There's no short-term gain. There's nothing on it. Just, hey, here it is. This is what we're doing. And we haven't seen anybody in our competitive markets do that, right? Like the way that we've seen it at least doing. So I think that's one thing that we're leaning into. Seems to be building some momentum for us, but I'll keep you posted.
I think for us, it comes back to kind of just our process. So, you know, I talked a little bit ago about onboarding. Our process is our technicians give 6 options on every single call. And we that is actually one of their KPIs, average options offered. And it's difficult. The only one we give them a little bit of leeway is HVAC maintenance. But in all other trades, it is 6 options. And we have to teach them how to build those. It's the toughest thing to do, for a technician, because they're a technician. They know how to work on the furnace. They know how to work on the water heater. And so building out the value in these options has been critical. And I know, you know, most companies give options. I think our differentiator is the process with which we run, and then we want to give those 6 options, and they need to be really, really good. And I think we've seen conversion rates jump. It helps with average ticket. And I think, you know, Zach was talking with Mantle about creating that shopping experience. It's hard to shop if they just give you 2 options. But if you've got 6, well, then all of a sudden I can start shopping, and well, maybe I want a warranty on a longer warranty on this option, and I don't want that piece or whatever. And they start kind of building out what it is that they actually want. And so for us, that's been the thing we've kind of leaned into, you know, are always looking to perfect it. It's not an exact science for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably the newest evolution, and there's a lot of AI stuff from a digital space that we probably could get into. We don't have enough time. That I think everybody really needs to be thinking about.
It's coming up.
Okay, but I think the shopping experience is important, and we've really leaned into that with Mantle software to change how people purchase. But, you know, we'll see how that's going well. So I agree with Chad on that.
One of the best parts of these events is what Chris mentioned earlier, is that you get to network and talk to people. I was talking to Maverick last night, and I hope you don't mind me sharing your idea, but, you know, we all, when I operated my business, we lost money on maintenance. I think most of us do. It's really to get in the door. And he just, on the radio, started giving away free maintenances or free memberships, but it doesn't include maintenance. They send promotions for maintenances out to those customers. So it's more of you're in the club, and I thought that was a great idea. And he a couple thousand memberships you added in a 4-month span, I think you said. Yeah, so differentiator, yeah. Way to get in the door when leads are soft. So, all right, this question is going to be asked to a couple different debaters up here. So the question is, what breaks first at scale? So when you guys have both grown sizable companies from, you know, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 million. What breaks first as you scale? Is it the operations, culture, cash flow? What's the pivotal point there?
A lot of things have broke on our journey. I think first step is around 10 million. You kind of start to, you know, break with managers managing managers starts to happen, right? So I think you start to have to break there. If you're asking like that type of question here, I think. And then I think we held on pretty good to about 30 million. And then I think things started to break again around 30 million pretty hard for us. Being able to be, you know, operationally, how much can you be involved? And, you know, moving over to Intac was a fun, bitch, fun, right? From there, and then you start to see some of the systems that you had as a smaller business don't align with scale. Some of the stuff, some of the pay plans we had kind of got broke as you scale across multiple locations, did stuff. So I think there's just an array of things there, but I think really the biggest thing for me were broke was, you know, as you scale, you know, relationships change in the business. And, you know, not everybody's going to make it with you. And that's kind of the sad part, I think, of the business that we don't talk probably enough about sometimes. It's bittersweet, but, you know, it's just like some people make it with you and some don't. And that's probably the hardest part that breaks in the business, I think, is the relationships with the people that you had as you were building this business all the way up to the scale it is, and they change in the dynamic. So I know that's not probably the answer. There it goes. Maybe the answer you're looking for, but I think that was the biggest thing for me. I remember calling Tommy, talking to him one time, and his was like, yeah, it's been Breitman, but it's part of the journey as you go. So that'd be my answer. I think just, you know, relationships break and the business changes and people shift, and you got to be okay making those changes.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it is kind of the process piece. You know, for us in 22, I think we hired 300 people and went from 50 million of revenue to 90 in 365 days. And I think what we learned through that is, as we kind of came out of that, was that we threw a lot of people at problems. And, you know, it's like, oh, we're growing, this is great, you know, just hire some more people, like, let's do all of this. And I think what we learned is that, like, it's very difficult to grow, you know, and we hear these amazing growth stories of, you know, we doubled in size, we've grown 60%. And what I would question people or encourage people to do is to understand what processes need to be in place. And it's really hard to build those processes in that condensed amount of time. And so I think getting out ahead of kind of process development. And then to Aaron's point, the other thing is like, you know, we both came up in Nexstar. We joined the same year, damn near the same month. And a lot of those processes when we were smaller were fantastic. Like, it was a great launching pad. But what I can tell you is a lot of those processes, like, they break. And you've got to go into, you've got to iterate. And it doesn't mean that what you did before was wrong. It just means it worked at that level. And you're going to need to adapt and create a new one to work at a different level. And the unfortunate part about that is you don't always know that it's broke until you break it. And then you've got to correct. And I think to Aaron's point, what allows you to correct on the fly quickly is talent. And he is 100% right. The people that sit at my leadership team today, I think the person that's been there the longest has probably been there for like 2 or 3 years. Because as you're growing, the talent requirement increases substantially. And I know we have a lot of owners in the room, and the one thing I would encourage you to do, if you want to minimize those breaks, you yourself are the lid, right? Maxwell talks about it, law of the lid. And you have to be growing and developing faster than your team. I think Tommy said it one time. He sat down with his team and said, hey, here's the deal. This is the pace at which I go, and if you can't keep up with this pace, you may not be on the team long. And so it's you as a leader setting that pace at which you're going to grow and develop that your team's either going to follow, or you're going to find out really quickly who can't hang, and I need to bring on someone who's, you know, got more talent and has maybe been where we want to go, and things of that nature.
You know, I should have mentioned, these guys never saw these questions. They're just answering these on the fly. And you, my next question was, how do you stay ahead of these processes when you grow? So you answered that well. I guess you just break them first. So thank you. All right, I want to leave a couple minutes for questions, and we're about 8 minutes away from time. So I want to cover this one quickly, even though you touched on it a little bit, Aaron. AI, everyone's talking about it, but how are you actually using AI in your business that really moves the needle and has an effect?
Yes, you look at the AI functions. A lot of the vendors are here have AI stuff that you can use. I mean, obviously, we're using things like book features, AI phones, implementing other technology to just add efficiency. We're doing Field Pro. We're doing, Field Pro recorded calls now, what they changed it to, listening to calls, bundling all that information up. The thing is, like, getting all this data from AI and then understanding kind of what to do with it and what activities to take with it. But I think the short term is, yeah, you want to use things that increase efficiencies through your dispatch, your call center. I think those are just pretty no-brainers at this point. I think most people are doing those and diving into that. But I think the real AI game for me is not so much operational. I think there's a ton of operational stuff that'll happen, that'll create efficiencies for sure in the business. I think everybody should take it serious because there will be real efficiencies that will happen through AI, through your HR departments, through finance, through lots of things that are coming very quickly. And then overlay AI stuff on your operating systems, which is a whole other, you know, kind of conversation you start to get into. But I think the AI game is also changing in just the digital space. I think people should really be aware of what's going to happen through search engines over the next year or two, and position yourself to really make sure that you're in a good spot through this, the AI search engine stuff. I think there's going to be a significant change in how behavior of searching and do stuff happens. And if you're not showing up, you'll be erased.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I mean, I think it's here. So I think this room is probably smart enough to realize that. But I feel like you talk to some people, it's like, oh, you know, it'll catch on. I mean, it's here. You know, we're answering in our call center, I think roughly about 30% of our book jobs are booked with an AI agent right now. And that's like over the last 6 months. Not to mention all the calls that it can handle. That is not a bookable call, but it's a customer calling in or, you know, just checking on something or whatever it is. AI is able to handle that really easily. So we're using a call center, we're using dispatch. I think the one area that I'm most interested in is kind of the business intelligence piece of, you know, how quickly it can generate reporting, how quickly it can generate like, hey, here's my data, what's going wrong? Whereas, you know, before it's like looking at each individual ticket and, you know, doing all this stuff. It's like the ability to have that information fast, I think is going to, you know, really challenge us and the talent on our team is one, are we capable of using these technologies to make quicker decisions, pivot quicker, especially as, you know, in the HVAC business, the seasonality and different stuff like that, can we pivot and move quicker so that we don't see kind of the ups and downs of this business and we're able to flatten out those lines? So I think it's very interesting. And I think something that, lucky for us, I talk to a lot of friends outside the industry and they're like, hey, who do you use for AI and phones and this, that, and the other? And I think we've gotten really lucky with a lot of the, really smart people who have entered the trade space and kind of enabled us to use this technology probably faster in most cases than a lot of industries out there.
Thank you very much. All right, we got time for probably one or two questions. Anyone have questions for these guys?
To the Point listeners, listen up. What if the biggest thing holding back your business isn't marketing or hiring, but your bennies? The benefits for home service companies, a better 401k can be the difference between great techs and losing them to the shop right down the street. Basic Capital, our newest sponsor, is the only 401k built to actually put your team on a real path to retirement. Companies that switch over see higher participation, happier teams, and dramatically low turnover because your crew finally gets a plan that's a true benefit, not just a checkbox. Don't wait until your best people walk. Make the move and click the link below to get 12 months with zero employer fees when you join Basic Capital.
Okay, Ishmael. Three questions. Very generous. Thank you, Chris.
Peterman, I'm like a huge advocate on onboarding, and I think I did it too late in my journey where I was taking onboarding seriously. Can you give us an overview of what your onboarding process looks like, maybe per department or what it looks like so everybody could learn from it?
Yeah, for sure. So for us, everyone comes to Indianapolis. So regardless of what location you're at, you come to Indianapolis. We onboard every other Monday. Typically, we'll have a class of, call it 10 to 15 people from, you know, a bunch of different departments, primarily technicians. So they come in if they're, you know, pretty far away, then we'll bring them in on a Sunday. They're going to spend the whole week in Indianapolis. So they come in, Monday is all in the classroom. They're kind of getting, you know, all of the HR stuff and this, that, and the other, how to clock in, technology, all of that on Monday. On Tuesday, if they're a field technician, they begin riding out with other technicians. So what we found is that we tried to teach them the process before they ever went out in the field, and like they had no basis for what we were trying to teach them. So we flipped that around where they go out with some of our technicians, and we have certain technicians that take new hires that run the process really well and do all of that. So they'll do that for, I think it's 2 days, and then the back end of that week, they come back in the classroom and we teach them what we call the Peterman way. And that's essentially from start to finish on a call. And then they're going to do in the second week, they're going to do additional ride out. So they ride out, they see a technician do it, they come back in, they train, and then they go back out with a technician, do it for a little bit, and then it's varied on when we let them out into the field. Some are quicker than others, but that's traditionally how we do it. I will tell you that, like, our training piece, one of the biggest like breakthroughs that we made from like a talent perspective is my COO is a former educator and middle school principal. So he understands all of the mechanics of learning. It blew my mind the first time I saw it. He was like, this is trash. We're going to redo this whole thing. This is how people actually learn, and this is how we're going to teach them. So that's been really, really impactful for us as we think about onboarding. Good question, Ishmael.
Thank you.
You're spending thousands to make the phone ring. But if your CSRs aren't picking up or converting, you might as well light it on fire. And what are the largest businesses in the country doing about this? They use Avoka, the leading AI platform in the trades. $100 million businesses like H.L. Bowman are operating with only 9 CSRs because Avoka handles up to 80% of the calls. Plus, Avoka follows up with your leads, grades your CSR calls, and helps you strategize. So my suggestion? Go with the leading company. Check out avoca.ai. That's avoca.ai. Click the link below.
Hey, thank you, guys. when you were at 30, 40 million and you guys had excessive cash or excess cash, what was your highest ROI, whether it be marketing, talent acquisition, or just buying other companies?
40 million?
It was last year. I
don't know if I can sit here and say, well, what was our highest ROI at 40 million? Mike
Barnhart, our CFO, is sitting over there. What was it? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love to spend money on marketing. I mean, I spent a shit ton of money on marketing.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, like, when it comes to, like, where do I put this excess money, I think the key is, where do you want to go, right? Like, so many people are like, I want to grow. I'm like, okay. Like, well, what's, like, the – where do you want to go? Because that's going to determine where you put your money. Like, if you're happy, you know, hey, I've got a $20 million company. We're putting 15 to 20 on the bottom line, and I'm really good dealing with the amount of people that I have to deal with, well, then – put your money in your pocket or put your money in building a process or do whatever. But if the goal is, hey, I want to be 150 million, well then, okay, I need to spend it on marketing. I need to go maybe get a high quality CFO. I need to do all of these things to build the business at 150. What I've always found is, like, talent is going to be king. And finding the people who have been where you want to go and can help you get there, they knock out a lot of roadblocks, and you don't spend stupid dollars. I mean, we still spend some, but try to minimize those. But yeah, I mean, to me, knowing where you want to go is the key, and what that looks like, and talking to the people in the room who have been there to tell you, hey, this is, do this, don't do that. You need these people to kind of help you along the journey.
Maybe to answer the question a little better, since I misunderstood what the question was there. At 40 million, we did a rebrand of the business. We did kind of what Chad talked about. We refocused our attention to what does the future of our brand look like? Where do we put our resources? Where do we put capital investment in? So we did a rebrand of the business. We added in multiple trades. We also looked at expansion in Greenfield to other markets. We understood what was the cost to be able to operate these. Can we cash flow that for the next, you know, 18, 24, 36 months? Have we built enough cash reserves for that? Do we feel good with that? We also then invested into our talent pool for developing technicians through building out our university, our training programs, all of those areas to be able to backfill that staff and that growth over time. So that's where we did it. Similar to what Chad's saying, there's really invested in the brand itself. So we went from transactional advertising to brand advertising to transactional mix, really spent that. Then we went into Greenfield market, really bought a bunch of, you know, bought branding messages to do that. And then we worked on just investing in talent development and spent the money there.
Thank you. All right, one more. Doc.
What's up, buds? Long time. Chad, I didn't know that you did a deal, so congratulations on that. That's fantastic. Yeah. Hell yeah. So along the ride, we're all trying to win here, right? And winning looks a little different for everybody. Maybe you give me, each of you guys give me your biggest personal win to date and what you think your next big win is going to be.
Well, I just got some extra money. How about you?
I say my first win was, first off, most of you guys know my story is I was bankrupt with my first business early on at the age of 28, went completely bankrupt. And then just getting back on my feet and getting going, I think the biggest win for me was my first $1 million, like in my bank account personally, felt like a recovery to life. So I'd say that was just, you're asking me a personal win. That was a personal win for me. I think it was just not giving up on myself and realizing that you can come back from bankruptcy back and have $1 million in your bank account. I think that was kind of the big win for me to get moving again. And then I think the next win is just that building a business that has opportunity for the future for the trades. I love the trades. My mission for our company is build great tradespeople, advance their life, and win big. So I love the trades. Trades saved my life. It allowed me to rebound back. From bankruptcy, it taught me a skill early on in my life that I didn't have. My goal future is to keep building this business where it can advance trades people's lives, create opportunity into it, and obviously, I got some financial goals that I'd like to achieve as we go in 26, 27 with the company. I was 28 years old when I went bankrupt with my first business, which was in new construction plumbing, about $3.5 million business, and during the housing crash, lost that business. So, it's been 19 years now of building, and trust me, the first nine was like nothing, we weren't doing anything. But so, yeah, I just think my personal win is just be able to bounce back. I think resilience matters and everything, right? And we'll all go through resilient stuff, so that's answering your question, I guess, in some sense. And then my other big goal benchmark was $100 million business, was to put that out there 15 years ago. When I met Mike 13 years ago, I said, I want to build a $100 million business. I don't know how it is. I didn't even know really anybody at that time. I wasn't part of Nexstar or any of those things. So it was my goal was still to build a $100 million business independently before potentially find a partner. And that's what I want to complete this year. So that's my other mission, is to complete that independently, grow business to $100 million. And then from there, look at what the next steps of chapters of my life and our business life is. That was $1 million when I wrote that goal.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, when I think about, I spend a lot of time at work, which I love. To Aaron's point, getting to hear the stories of guys who came in as a $18 an hour apprentice and now are running a branch, or some of our lead installers make $130,000, $140,000 a year, and they started like 3 years ago. They're making $18 an hour, and I'm like, wow. This is really, really cool. I don't know that there's many industries where someone could accelerate that quickly. And just to hear those stories of guys who, got into the trade and, they were kind of not knowing where they were going to go. And then all of a sudden they're in a place where, their wife's able to go back to school to become a nurse, and she's always wanted to become a nurse. Like, to me, those are the stories that keep me working, because the ability for something that is, in my mind, the trades, our mission at Peterman Brothers is to elevate the trades. That's what we want to do. That's what we talk about. When we walk into a customer's home, we're here to elevate the trades. And I don't come, I mean, my dad started our company back in 86. He was an HVAC tech. And, I knew what dad did, but it wasn't anything that I was interested in. I can't fix a damn thing. Go figure. To be able to be a part of an industry that, to me, has made such an impact on so many lives, to have a small part in that, to be in rooms like this where, you got the best of the best that have, truly revolutionized this. I mean, we talked about Nexstar. I remember joining back in 2015, and I'm just looking all googly-eyed at these guys who were running, at the time, back then it was like 30, $40 million companies. Like, that was the biggest of the big. Like, these guys were rock stars, the Dave Geigers of the world, all of those guys that, you know, you looked up to, and to be able to share kind of our story and to be able to say, hey, you guys helped me out a ton, and to just be doing the same thing. Like, to me, this is the most fun that we get to do is learn from each other, share it. There's plenty of freaking business out there. So it doesn't matter if I'm in your market, not in your market, who gives a shit? We're all here to help each other, hopefully create lives for the people that work at our companies and many more. I mean, I think all of the activity in the space, like people are starting to notice that we know what we're doing, and we're doing some really, really good stuff out there. And to me, that's kind of the exciting part about the future and where we're headed for sure.